Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gort. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Armageddon when we come back. Now, let me ask you this. What do you think is wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong, very wrong, with the Ten Commandments. They've been banned from our public schools. They're banned in our public institutions, and they've been banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they're teaching the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our schools, our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion? That's right, she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. Our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments of the Scripture, and the penalties, as well as the 33 benefits for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what the penalty is to suffer from its effect. So whether you call it the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, the Natural Law, Karma, or something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And you can call right now. The program is educational, informative, and entertaining. You can call and order. 417-273-4967 is the number to call. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. You just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Armageddon. Armageddon is the end of the game. Well, it's the end of the game in the first round, the first 6,000 years of man's experience here on planet Earth. It'll be a little over 6,000. 6,000 years is now expired, so it's going to run a little longer than 6,000. I don't know how much longer. But if we take a look at international geopolitics, and then we compare that with Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21, it looks like to me 10, 15, 20 years or less. And if George Bush has his way, and we can go to war with Iran anytime soon, it could precipitate this explosion in the Middle East. And we could see humongous armies and humongous wars. In fact, I think we're looking at World War III right now with the treaties that the Chinese and the Russians have with the Iranians. When we go into Iran, I think it's going to trigger those treaties, and that'll be the beginning of World War III. Let's see if that comes to pass. Well, anyway, we've been looking at the story here from the perspective of Esau Eden. Who is this Esau or Edom in the Bible and Bible prophecy? Well, it turns out that they are the central characters. They are, along with the Israelites, the number one character. It's like the star and the co-star. The Israelites are the stars, and the Edomites are the co-stars. And there's a conflict, and there's sex and intrigue, and there's conspiracies, and there's spying, and there's all kinds of, well, all of the things, you know, that make a story or make a movie, make a play. And that's what we've been taking a look at here, is this conflict between the white, Anglo-Saxon, Western Christian world and Judaism. Judaism, Zionism, the conflict. So in the last program, I showed you some of the moral distinctions from the Talmud compared with the Bible. Now, since the Jews have an inclination towards this Talmudic religion, which defies God, it's an obvious conflict that will exist between these two people and anyone else who adheres to the laws or ways of God. So repugnant was the Talmud to the white Christian people of Europe through the Middle Ages, that on numerous occasions, kings and popes issued edicts to have the Talmud burned, and every country in Europe has expelled the Jews from their midst at least once. And like Esau and Jacob, the Jews and the white Christian people have been struggling, and they have been in conflict with each other from their very first encounter with one another. And a look through history reveals the continual disputes, arguments, and disagreements between the Jews and Christians. One of the earliest instances is the dialogue of Justin Martyr with Tryphon the Jew. And that's recorded in the New Standard Jewish Encyclopedia, 5th edition, page 562, published in 1977. And such dialogues and disputations between Jews and Christians generally centered upon the same subjects of the argument. It was the virgin birth, the nature of the messianic prophecies and their fulfillment, and the divinity of Jesus and the various aspects of the law of Moses. Contrasting opinions on such topics have been permanent traits of these two people. Now, there's a conflict of genetic traits also. This contrasting and conflicting ways and thinking between Jews and white Europeans is not artificial, nor is it a result of their environment, but rather it is based on the nature of their physical constitutions. Thus, the conflict between them is not reconcilable any more than it was between Esau and Jacob. A Jewish fellow by the name of Maurice Samuel, in speaking to those of the white race, explained it very well. He said, quote, and he said this, by the way, this is published by Maurice Samuel, in a book called You Gentiles, published by Harcourt, Brace & Company, New York, 1924. It's on pages 19 and 23. Here's what this Jewish fellow had to say. He said, there are two life forces in the world that I know, Jewish and Gentiles, ours and yours. I do not believe that this primal difference between Gentile and Jews is reconcilable. You and we may come to an understanding, but never to a reconciliation. There will be irritation between us as long as we are in intimate contact. For nature and constitution and a vision divide us from all of you forever. Now, the conflicting differences that exist between Jews and those of the white race are primarily a result of their genetic differences, or their nature and constitution. Jews act and think differently from white Christian peoples because there is a difference in their brains. Well, that's according to Dr. Richard Goodman. He did a study that he made for the Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, of which there are 112 hereditary diseases within the Jewish race, which originate from causes found within the Jewish brain and central nervous system. And that's a document, as documented in Genetic Disorders Among the Jewish People by Dr. Richard Goodman, published by the Johns Hopkins University Press. And according to Dr. Richard Goodman, in a study that he made for Johns Hopkins, he said there's 112 of these hereditary diseases. Some of these diseases include Bloom syndrome, familial D-Y-S-A-U-T-O-N-O-M-I-A, Goucher's disease, and Tay-Sachs disease. These mental and neurological abnormalities have a direct relation on Jewish behavior, behavioral patterns, which other peoples would find to be obnoxious and alien. These mental diseases no doubt account for some of the common Jewish traits, such as, but not limited to, being abrasive, rude, stingy, aggressive, schizophrenic, and hostile. Such mental and neurological disorders among Jews has long been known to the science world. Dr. Joseph A. Jacobs, who is a Jew himself, in the Journal of the Anthropological Institute of Great Britain, published in 1886, volume 15, page 360, and he has lists comparing high percentage of Jews having mental diseases. And in the Jewish Encyclopedia, it states that the Jews are more subject to diseases of the nervous system than the other races and peoples among which they dwell. Hysteria and neuroasthenia appear to be the most frequent. Some physicians of large experience among the Jews have even gone so far as to state that most of them are neurasthenic and hysterical. Footnote number 13 cites that from the Jewish Encyclopedia, volume 9, published in 1905 on page 225. Dr. Alexander Pilez, P-I-L-E-Z, world-famous psychiatrist from Vienna, states in his outstanding work called Wiener Klinische Rundschau, page 888, cites, quote, cases where acute psychoses lend to idiocy and lunacy are of particular frequency within the Jewish community. By contrast, there are no hereditary diseases which exist exclusively within the white race, and the Negro race has only one, sickle cell anemia. As a highly mixed and mongrelized people, the Jews would be more prone to diseases than pure races, and the same is true with hybridized plants and animals, and this would include diseases of the mind. Idiocy and imbecility are found comparatively more often among Jews than among non-Jews. The Mongolian type of idiocy is also very frequently observed among Jews. And among the Jews, the proportion of insane has been observed to be very large. And Jews are more liable to be acute or to the acute psychoses of early age than are Gentiles. Footnote number 14 cites the Jewish Encyclopedia, volume 7, 1904 on pages 556 and pages 603 and 604. Now, the Jewish Encyclopedia also states the causes of these mental disorders in Jews is due to the neurotic taint of the race. It's a racial characteristic. And consanguineous marriages. Consanguineous marriages. It's an odd word. This high proportion of insanity, idiocy, imbecility, and lunacy in Jews helps to explain why the Talmud is a collection of imbecilic ramblings of insane minds. Jews and white people are clearly not of the same mind. The Jews and the white race are clearly two different characters in God's script, acting out the different roles of Esau and Jacob. They are two manner of people, spiritually, morally, mentally, and biologically, causing natural conflicts between them which are not reconcilable. And then there's Esau's hatred of Jacob. The conflicting and antagonistic relationship between Esau and Jacob was magnified and intensified when Esau sold his birthright to Jacob for a mere bowl of pottage. We read that in Genesis 25, verse 33. Jacob then had the legal right to receive the blessings of the inheritance, which he received from Isaac by pretending that he was Esau. When Esau realized what had happened, and that Jacob now possessed the blessings that could have been his, Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing. And that's recorded in Genesis 27, verse 41. This hatred was now to be an attribute and an earmark of the character of Esau Edom. Throughout the rest of the script, this attribute does not change, nor does it subside. It is clearly revealed by Scripture that Esau Edom would be a perpetual adversary of Jacob Israel. As it is written, the children of Esau hated the sons of Jacob, and the hatred and enmity were very strong between them all the days unto this day. Thus, the descendants of Esau would hate and despise the entire race descended from Jacob. Esau's hatred of Jacob was exhibited when Edom refused to give Israel passage through his border. That's recorded in Numbers 20, verse 21. During the 8th century B.C., the prophet Amos distinctly rebukes Edom for her cruelty and anger towards Israel. Thus says the Eternal, "For three transgressions of Edom, and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof. Because he did not pursue his brother with the sword, and did cast off all pity, and his anger did tear perpetually, and he kept his wrath forever." Now, some 200 years later, the prophet Ezekiel also offers condemnation against Edom, or Mount Seir, the Edomites, because of their perpetual hatred for the children of Israel. "Because you, Mount Seir, has had a perpetual hatred and have shed the blood of the children of Israel by the force of the sword in the time of their calamity, in the time that their iniquity had an end." And that's recorded in Ezekiel 35:5. Mount Seir, representing the nation or race of Esau Edom, or the Edomites, has had a perpetual hatred for the children of Israel down through history. And all throughout the Bible, the Edomites had shown their hatred and opposition of God's chosen people, Israel, and this was a characteristic of those people which they would not lose. Now today, I might add in, we see the Israelites, the Israelis, we call them, who pretend to be the Israelites, and they're called the chosen seed or the chosen people. 70 million Christian evangelicals, fundamentalist Christians here in the United States, support Israel and support the Jewish nation. 70 million. Now, for practical purposes, we have about 65% of our people going to church every Sunday. And so out of 300 million people, times 0.65 million, let's see what we got here. We got 300 and take 65. That leaves 235 million people. 65 million. Those are the religious people. Those are the churchgoers. Those are the people that support Israel. That's the religious right in this country. Those are the people that elected George Bush. Now we've got a war. This is an Israeli war. This war in Iraq benefits Israel immensely. And the coming war with Iran is going to benefit Israel immensely. And the Jews have said that they will not allow an Arab country to have a nuclear weapon. And that's precisely, or a Muslim country, I don't know, Arab or Muslim, but that's precisely what the Iranians are pursuing. So boys and girls, make up your mind to it. War with Iran is absolutely inevitable. And the Jewish lobby in the United States and the government of the United States is going to ensure that that war occurs, just like they did with World War I and World War II. These world wars are immensely profitable, and they're politically advantageous to this conspiracy. And this is a part of the script. This is where international geopolitics come in to play. This is what this story is all about, children. Now he says here, some 200 years later, the prophet Ezekiel also offers condemnation against Edom. In Ezekiel 35, verse 5. And he said, "Mount Seir, representing the nation or race of Esau, Edom, or the Edomites, had a perpetual hatred for the children of Israel down through history, and that hatred is in full bloom today. And just the mention of Jesus Christ in the land of Israel can get you thrown in jail. Now, they might tolerate Christians, but they have a hatred for Jesus Christ. They had that same hatred in the Scripture, and that's why they put him to death. And these are the people that killed the Messiah. These are the Pharisees. They're the ones that did it. Now, nowhere in Scripture is such hatred and animosity to be found as that which Esau Edom had for Jacob Israel. The question is, where in history can we find this manner of hatred of one group of people by another? The parallel is clearly revealed in the hatred which the Jews have for the white Christian people. And the most obvious evidence of the perpetual hatred that Jews have towards the white Christian people is found in their own Talmud. In this work of hatred and perversion, the Jewish rabbis and sages throughout the centuries have expressed the Jewish attribute of hate towards white Christians. Now, some of the terms used in the Talmud and other Jewish writings for Christians are goy, goyim, which means cattle, Gentile, min, minim, minuth, heathen, kuthian, akim, idolaters, nikri, and notsrim. Now, here's what the Talmud has to say. The following are some excerpts from the Talmud which demonstrates this Jewish hatred for Christians. In case you've never read the Talmud, you probably have a copy of it in your local library. And so it's divided up into various books. And here's what it says. It is allowed to cheat a Gentile and take usury of him. Baba Mizia 61a. The Goyim, Christians, are regarded as unclean. That comes from Shebath 145b. And it's not allowed to rob a brother Jew, but to rob a Gentile is allowed. Baba Mizia 61a. The Goyim are not like men, but are as animals. Kerihuth 6b. And the seed of a Goy is worth the same as that of a beast. Kethuboth 3b. And a Jew must not enter the home of a Christian, Gittin 62a. The Goyim are not to be cured or helped when sick, even for money, Abodah Zara 27b. It is permitted to deceive a Goy, Babha, 113b, and Jews must try to deceive Christians, cited from Zohar 1, 160a. A Jew may lie and perjure himself to condemn a Christian, Babha, 113a. And a Jew shall not do injury to other Jews, but the law does not prohibit injury to a Goy, cited from Mishnah Sanhedrin 57. Those who do good to a Christian will not rise from the dead, Zohar 1:25b. And all the festivals of the followers of Jesus are forbidden, and we must conduct ourselves towards them as we would towards idolaters, Abodah Zara 2b. And do not save a Goy in danger of death, Hilkoth Akam 20, page 1. And when a Jew and a Goy come to court, you must absolve the Jew and take his side as far as possible according to Jewish law. If, however, the Jew can be absolved according to Gentile law, absolve him. Babha, 113a. And a Jew may keep anything he finds belonging to the Akim, Christian. To return it is a sin. Cited from Choshchim Ham 266, page 1. Now, here we see the Talmud clearly represents an underlying Jewish object of hatred towards Christians. It teaches Jews to be against the Goyim in every aspect of life, while working to destroy the Christians' religion and undermining their culture and their society. Now take a look, boys and girls, at 20 million aliens residing within our borders, and then the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, rap music, and the filth and perversion that comes out of our television screens and out of Hollywood. It is a program that is anti-Christian, anti-Bible, and anti-Ten Commandments, as is evidenced by the Ten Commandments having been taken out of our public life, taken out of our public schools, and taken out of our consciousness. They're even taken out of our churches. Now, this hatred of Christians, as taught by the ancient rabbis, has continued to succeeding generations, and it is prevalent in the words and feelings of Jews to this day. Elie Wiesel, or Wiesel, the Nobel Prize-winning Jewish author and world-famous Holocaust survivor, promotes hatred of white people by Jews. In one of his books, he said every Jew somewhere in his being should set apart a zone of hate, healthy, virile hate, for what the German personifies and what persists in the German. To do otherwise would be a betrayal of the dead. That's cited by Elie Wiesel, Legends of Our Time, published by Holt, 1968, page 142. Now, it is indeed interesting that the same enduring hate Edom had for Jacob, the Jews have towards Christians, and it is also ironic that Jews who have all of this hate in them for Christians have gone to great lengths to convince the world that they are completely innocent of any such attribute, and it is the Christian who hates the Jew. Now, the prophecies of Christ's birth were well known to the people at that time. He was to be the king over all of the earth, so said the scripture in Zechariah 14:9 and Daniel 7, verse 13. The Messiah, in Daniel 9, verse 25. The Redeemer of Israel, cited in Isaiah 59, verse 20, and Isaiah 62, verse 11. And would be of the house of David, said Jeremiah in 23, verse 5. The script also reveals that Christ had enemies from the moment of his birth. Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem. And they said, well, where is he that is born king of the Jews, or the Judeans? For we have seen a star in the east, and we're come to worship him. Now when Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all of Jerusalem with him. So says Matthew 2, verses 1 through 3. Well, why was Herod troubled? Why was Herod concerned about the birth and the arrival of the Messiah, Jesus Christ? First, we find that Herod was not of the same racial lineage as Christ. Antipater, an Idumean by birth, was made by Caesar procurator of all of Judea, and his son, commonly called Herod the Great, was at the time of Christ's birth the king of Judea, including Idumea. Idumea, the Edomites. Herod the Great was an Edomite. Well, hang on here, kids. We'll be back with more on this thing called the Edomites. But let me give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be addressed or accessed through the same website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend will necessarily reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing a book called The Bible as it Relates to Armageddon, and a second book here, which gives us the cast of characters, or at least the background, on one of the prime characters in this whole play called Armageddon. And that's who is Esau Edom. I thought it was a pretty good book, and it's about a 1 in 100. So I'm going to grade this one. You'll read 100 books before you find a book like this. And of all of the books that I've read, I've never read one like this one. This one is not only true, accurate, and correct, and I've checked it out pretty carefully, except for a couple of minor things that I took issue with or would take issue with, but then, hell, I'd take issue with probably any book I read, so this isn't anything new, but this is put out by a fellow by the name of Charles Wiseman, Charlie Wiseman, published first in 1991 and then again in 1992, and it's put out by Wiseman Publications. Wiseman Publications, that's W-E-I-S-M-A-N, Publications, at 11751 West River Hills Drive, number 107D, in Burnsville, Minnesota. And the zip code is 55337. Once more, that's Wiseman Publications, 11751 West River Hills Drive, number 107D, in Burnsville, Minnesota, 55337. And he had a phone at that time. Let's see if his number's still any good. It's 612-890-0202. Try that one more time. It's 610-890-0202. 0202. Now, evidently that number wasn't correct, and so I put a note here many years back. So let's try the second number, 612-952-0202. Again, that's 612-952-0202, and I think that may help out. Now, if you can't find that name and address, or that everything proves to be no good, then go to your local Bible bookstore. See if they're carrying the book. Or if not, then you have to go to a used bookstore and give them the name of the book and the author and see if they can find one. Who is Esau Edom? Name of the book. Well, now, Herod, like his father Antipater, was an Edomian, or an Edomite by birth. Josephus, in his Antiquities of the Jews, also esteems Herod as an Edomian in Book 14, Chapter 15, Section 2, page 438. Herod had talked in secret to the wise men, telling them to diligently search for the young child, and when they found him, to come back and tell him so that he may come and worship him also. That's recorded in Matthew 2, verses 7 and 8. Now, this was actually a ruse so that Herod could kill Christ. When the wise men found Christ, they were warned of God in a dream not to return to Herod, in Matthew 2, verse 12. And thus they did not return to Herod with the information of Christ's location, which made Herod the Edomite furious. And the scripture says in Matthew 2, verse 16, when Herod saw that he had been tricked by the Magi, he became very enraged, and he sent and he slew all the male children that were in Bethlehem and all the coasts thereof, from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had diligently inquired of the wise men. Now Herod the Edomite had such a hatred for Christ and what he represented that he had ordered a mass execution to make sure that Jesus would be killed. Had not the angel of the Eternal instructed Joseph to flee to Egypt with Jesus, Herod would have surely succeeded in killing him. Now, other enemies of Christ included the Pharisees, who were promoting and following the religion of Babylon, which developed into the Babylonian Talmud, which is the basis of Judaism today. It's called the Babylonian Talmud. Thus, the rabbis and Jewish Talmud have picked up where Herod and the Pharisees left off in their onslaught of hatred against Jesus Christ, the Redeemer of Israel. And in the Talmud, Jesus is referred to as a sorcerer, an idolater, a seducer, a blasphemer, and a fool. And it says that he committed bestiality, sexual perversion, and magic. And the Talmud assigns 4 deaths for Jesus: stoning, burning, decapitation, and strangulation. The Jews' assault against Christ and Christianity is historic, as admitted by the Jew Bernard Lazare. He said, the Jew is not content merely to destroy Christianity, but he preaches the gospel of Judaism. He not only assails the Catholic or the Protestant faith, but he incites to unbelief and then imposes on those whose faith he has undermined his own conception of the world, of morality, and of life. He is engaged in his historic mission, the annihilation of the religion of Christ. That's cited in footnote 23 from Bernard Lazare, Anti-Semitism, Its History and Causes, translated by Britain's Publishing Company in London in 1967, and next on page 158. The hereditary hatred of the Jew for Christ and Christianity is clearly expressed in the Talmud and other Jewish works. And despite this fact, the organized church world cannot or will not acknowledge that the decline of that or of their Christian nation is proportional to the number and influence of the Jews allowed to exist in it. Now, anti-Semitism. The term anti-Semitism has been used by the Jews to counter and to conceal God's natural order and plan in the world, an order which has assigned to the Jew the role of aggressor, hater, destroyer, seducer, invader, and corrupter, by simply calling anyone anti-Semitic. The Jews attempt to put all blame for conflict on the other party. In other words, it's those Arabs, it's those Palestinians, it's those Germans. They are the haters, they are the aggressors, when in fact it is, in reality, the Jew. And writing in the American Hebrew, Jesse H. Holmes said this. He said, it can hardly be an accident that antagonism directed against the Jews is to be found pretty much everywhere in the world. There are Jews and non-Jews, and they are associated, and as the Jews are the common element of the situation, it would seem probable that the cause will be found in them rather than in the widely varying groups which feel this antagonism. The result of this name-calling tactic is to focus the attention on the effect of the conflict and not on or at its cause. The cause is always some obnoxious trait of the Jew that precipitates conflict against or an action against the Jews, and the Jews then say that it is anti-Semitism, or it's unwarranted, it's Jew hatred, or something else. And yet the hatred or the action against the Jew is a natural response. Writing under the chapter title of Jew Hatred as a Natural Instinct, Samuel Roth said this, quote, "Anti-Semitism, that is Jew hatred, is so instinctive that it may quite simply be called one of the primal instincts of mankind. One of the important instincts by which the race helps to preserve itself against total destruction. And I cannot emphasize the matter too strongly. Anti-Semitism is not, as many Jews have tried to make the world believe, an active prejudice. It is a deeply hidden instinct with which every man is born. He remains unconscious of it, as of all other instincts of self. Preservation until something happens to awaken it. Just as when something flies in the direction of your eyes, the eyelids close instantly and of their own accord. So swiftly and so surely is the instinct of anti-Semitism the awakening in man, or having been awakened in man, there is not a single instance when the Jews have not fully deserved the bitter fruit of the fury of their persecutors." So says Samuel Roth in the book Jews Must Live, published in 1934, and that's cited on page 64. Now, the Jew, like Esau, has revolted against God's order, and all are justified who do not act, or who do act, rather, against the Jew in this regard. Thus, it would seem as if the grievance of the anti-Semite were well-founded. The Jewish spirit is essentially a revolutionary spirit, and consciously or otherwise, the Jew is a revolutionist. That's Bernard Lazare, Anti-Semitism, Its History and Causes, on page 149. Now, the anti-Semitic charge, along with the hate laws, is a tool that the Jew uses in defense of his offensive, hostile, revolutionary, and anti-Christian nature. If it can be insinuated that one charge with anti-Semitism is the hater and aggressor, emotional response of the masses can be directed against that individual. That will then force him into either silence or a loss of status in society, business, or politics. Now, are you getting the import of this? Let me put my little mark here in the margin and make a comment. There's a deception. Armageddon is the result of the deception. The deception is we have adopted the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in place of the 10 commandments. Who gave us the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto? That's the guy who is your enemy, not your friend. The guy that gave us the 10 commandments was Moses out at Mount Sinai. He got them directly from God. Moses and the Bible and the Ten Commandments are our friends. The communists, the Reds, the Edomites, those that perpetrate, and are selling us the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto are our enemies. They hate us. They're in the process of destroying us. Now, that destruction is well on its way. I don't think that there's any salvaging of the United States of America any more than there was any salvaging of the Titanic. We've already hit the iceberg. There will be survivors, but there will be many more victims. Now, on this issue of Armageddon, God told us over and over and over that the reason behind this in Ezekiel 5 and Ezekiel 6 is for our filthy abominations, our adoption of the Babylonian Talmud as a way of life, our rejection of the Ten Commandments as a way of life, has an outcome. You have a choice, I have a choice, everybody has a choice. Now, it is true to this degree. Once in a while, I'll get a letter here, and they'll say, well, what's the use? It's already predestined. It is true. Armageddon is predestined. That Armageddon story is going to come to pass, whether we like it or not. What isn't predestined is your reaction to it. You're a free moral agent. You can make a choice. You can choose to go along to get along or get along to go along, but in the end, there's going to be an outcome. There's going to be some penalty. There's going to be a result that comes from it. That's not predestined. That's not predestination. Bible prophecy you could call predestination, but your actions or inactions are not predestined. That's your choice. And that choice is described to you in Deuteronomy chapter 30. And that's where God said, I'm going to set before you life and good and death and evil. And he has. And in this play, the Bible, he has set before us life and good and death and evil. So far, we Americans, and I suspect you Canadians and Australians and you Christian people in the western part of Europe, you know, Western Europe, I suspect that you've chosen communism and chosen to reject God of your own free will. Well, okay, kids, but then when this comes down, you got nobody to blame but yourself. Now, the term anti-Semitism has been used by the Jews to counter and to conceal God's natural order and plan in the world. It's an order which has assigned to the Jew the rule of aggressor, hater, destroyer, seducer, invader, and corrupter by simply calling one an anti-Semite or anti-Semitic. The Jew then attempts to put the blame for the conflict on somebody else. They're blaming you or me or somebody else, and they call us anti-Semitic. Well, ever since the Jews invented this label, the libel charge of anti-Semitism back in the 1880s, and the word anti-Semitism was first printed in 1880, so says the Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 1, published in 1901, page 641, been around for a long time. It has been built up with Jewish money, Jewish organizations, and propaganda, such as, but not limited to, so that now the world and the word is like snake venom, which paralyzes one's nervous system. Even the mention of the word Jew is shunned unless it's used in a most favorable and positive context. For example, being God's chosen people. Now, this stigma exists even with conservative and right-wing individuals and organizations. They speak of world problems, they speak of world conflicts and wars as being caused by the communists or the Zionists or by those international bankers or the CFR, the Trilateral Commission. Even though there is clear evidence that Jews are behind all of these movements, all of these organizations, the Jewish connection is avoided like the bubonic plague. Now, the end result, then, is that those who fear being labeled anti-Semitic will never be effective in exposing the root of the problems in our land. No such fear existed in Jesus Christ, who boldly spoke against the Talmudic Pharisees face-to-face, live and direct, in every public gathering that he appeared in. He specifically pointed out their characteristics, and he said that they were hypocrites. He called them a generation of vipers. He said they were full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness. He called them blind guides. He called them a wicked and adulterous generation. He said they were full of iniquity. He called them serpents and murderers, and he said that they were of their father, the devil. That's what Christ had to say about the Edomites. Now, because of Christ's exposure of the traits and ways of these Talmudic Jews, they could not easily continue in their ungodly practices. These Jews thus sought to kill him, so says John 8:37 and John 8:40, and they eventually succeeded. In today's thought-controlled world, Jesus Christ would be considered a hater, and he would be branded and labeled an anti-Semite. This is clear because the Jews have made it known that the New Testament is the most anti-Semitic book ever written. The Jews call the New Testament anti-Semitic. Now, if the Jew is to live in Christian society, his true nature and his attributes must be concealed, and they must be censored from the masses, or else they cannot succeed. Thus, the Jew states that throughout history he has been the one persecuted, and yet the cause of that persecution, anti-Christian and offensive Jewish traits, are never told, and when these traits are concealed, the cause and nature of much of the problems, the conflicts, the conspiracies and wars in the world are also concealed. Speaking on this subject, Henry Ford, the manufacturing magnate, said, "Half of the confusion which men meet in their efforts to account for the world is due to their ignorance of just where is the Jew. He is always a key, but if the key is disguised as something else, how can it be used?" Published by the International Jew, Dearborn Publishing Company, 1921, Volume 2, page 245. So here we now have the key as to the origin and source for so much of the conflict and friction that is now so prevalent in the world today. Two of the main characters acting on stage in the world have two diametrically opposite value systems. "The spiritual dispositions and the twain shall never meet," to quote the Jew Marie Samuels. And he said, "I suspected from the first dawning of Jewish self-consciousness that between you Gentiles, you white Christians, and us Jews lies an unbridgeable gulf." Now, that was Marie Samuels in a book called You Gentiles, published in 1924 on page 9. The Jews, being an offshoot or an extraction of Esau, Edom, have a deep-seated hatred for God's people, the Israelites, the white Israelite Christian people. Edom's role in the script calls out for this hatred to be acted out in the world, and they cannot and will not deviate from their role. Most see what is happening in the world, but they can offer no logical reason as to why there would exist this continual conflict, struggle, and hatred between the Jew and those of the white race. Most do not understand or refuse to accept the fact that God has so ordained this conflict from the beginning. This is the only logical explanation for what we see in the world regarding international geopolitics today. Well, that's that part of the story. Now, if you take a look at the genealogy of these people, you'll find here that Abraham and his wife Sarah had one son by the name of Isaac. Isaac married a girl by the name of Rebecca, and Rebecca had a son named Jacob, and the firstborn son, Esau. So all she had was those two. But Jacob had 12 boys. And those 12 sons, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Issachar, Zebulun, Joseph, and Benjamin. And he had a daughter, too, by the name of Dinah. He had 13 children in all, but he had 12 boys. These 12 boys became the 12 tribes of Israel. The fourth born, Judah, had 5 sons. His 5 sons were Onan, Shelah, Phares, and Zerah. It is from Phares and Zerah that we have the main branches of the real Jews that are alive today. Now, I'm a Scotsman, and we can trace our genealogy through the British Israel Society clear back to Adam and Eve. Queen Elizabeth has her genealogy that goes clear back to Adam and Eve, and it is preserved by the British Israel Society. They used to be located at No. 1 Buckingham Gate, London, England. And for more than 800 years, they have kept and preserved the genealogies of these people. In the United Nations in 1948, when this debate was up, or came up, over the formation of Israel, an Arab, I think he was a Saudi, stood up and he said, "We can trace our genealogy back to Abraham. We know where we come from." And he challenged the Jewish delegation to present their credentials. And there was total silence. Today, all of the Arabs in the world, and I've never met one yet that could, he can trace his genealogy back to Abraham, and he can go from Abraham back to Adam and Eve. The Jews cannot do that. And that's because they're a mongrel race and they've intermarried in violation of God's law. The white Anglo-Saxons, the 10 tribes of Israel, have been found and they can all be identified in the world today. These people, the Jews, have now been identified. And they were identified by this fellow, Charles Wiseman. I think Wiseman did us all a big service. Well, I'm about out of time again, kids. We're going to have to leave it right there with that part of the story completed. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk. For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.